Martin Luther King Jr. was one of the greatest men to ever live. And I'm not saying it because he was a black man that led a black movement. We know what he did in history. We know how great he was in that arena of history. But I want to focus on one aspect of what he did. He focused on freedom. He was a freedom fighter. He was a patriot. Contrary to people who did not agree with his agenda. Those who did not want to see the black people rise up. Largely those people who were in the Democratic Party. But that isn't the focus of this podcast or this monologue here. The biggest focus here is he fought for freedom. And he wasn't a perfect man. We all have our demons, our sins, our skeletons in the closet. And Martin Luther King Jr. had his. But one thing that he did not have an issue with was being an American patriot who believed in freedom. And he believed in freedom to the point where he wouldn't even fight in a war because he didn't believe that he needed to violate the rights of other people in Vietnam, especially when he didn't even have civil rights in his own country. But he also felt as if he should not even be fighting in a war to violate someone else's civil rights, to win some war that had nothing to do with America at all. So he was a freedom fighter, probably, in my opinion, for the entire world. He didn't say he wants blacks to have more rights than whites. He wanted equal rights for everyone, including the people who were white supremacists. He wanted equal rights. He wanted them to have their rights still, but just give everyone else theirs. And so he became a hated man because when you are a patriot and when you are a freedom fighter and you fight for liberty and justice for all, and you are upholding the American flag by doing that. This is all part of the flag. This is all part of America. This is all part of the makeup of America. When you begin to fight in that way, you generate enemies. And one of his greatest enemies was J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover was the head of the FBI for about 30 or 40 years. And he ran the department, obviously. So if there was any national crime or national criminals that needed to be, looked at or monitored or arrested, he was involved. J. Edgar Hoover would give them the orders to go out, the feds to go out there and make the arrest or to start the investigation. So Martin Luther King Jr. created the enemy because, J. Edgar Hoover did not like his movement. Now, we know why he didn't like the movement. He didn't like the movement because he was a racist. We know that. But we're not going to focus on this part of the story. We're going to focus on the fact that he did not like the movement of freedom for a certain demographic of people. And he came out on record and stated that he didn't trust this man, this great man called Martin Luther King Jr. He didn't like his movement. He didn't like what he was doing. So he began to try to find ways to bring him down. And one of the ways Martin Luther King Jr., he was able to come after him was to get at his associates. And one of his lawyers was a so-called known communist. He used to be a communist, or he was a communist, and so-called, allegedly. And then he became Martin Luther King Jr.'s lawyer and therefore began to fight for freedom for the black people and the black cause, because he wanted everyone to have rights, just like the whites in America. So he fought for a disenfranchised demographic of people who weren't able to experience the same freedoms as everyone else. And because of that, this connection between his lawyer and himself, it invited J. Edgar Hoover to wiretap him. He ordered a wiretap. He ordered there to be FBI informants within Martin Luther King Jr.'s organization. And it took Martin Luther King Jr. about 13 years to realize that, oh, about 12 years to realize that he was being wiretapped. It took him a long time to realize that. He had his associates or his people tell him that he feels like they feel as if he was being monitored by the FBI, and he would get mad at people. He would argue with people stating that he was not being investigated by the FBI. He wasn't being wiretapped by the FBI. It was ridiculous. It was crazy. So it got to the point where J. Edgar Hoover, he actually put a bug in Robert F. Kennedy's ear and said, look, Martin Luther King Jr. is his lawyer is a communist. We have him on wiretap. We need you to stop associating with him. And we need you, more importantly, to tell your brother, John F. Kennedy, to stop talking to this guy. Robert didn't agree with it. He didn't believe in it. And then later on, you know, over time, he began to get swayed a little bit. And he told Martin Luther King, say, hey, can you sever this tie here? Because this guy is a known communist. This lawyer of yours is a known communist. And so and Martin Luther King said, you know, he agreed to, you know, pull back from the guy just out of precaution. And because they were wiretapping him still, they were monitoring him still, he was still associating with this lawyer. And they caught it. And Robert F. Kennedy at that point began to say, oh my God, this guy he lied to us. He's still associating with this communist lawyer. So he put a bug in Robert put a bug in JFK in John's ear. I said, John, you have to cut ties with this guy. You're the president. He's talking to a communist. We have him on wiretap. You have to be careful of this guy. John said he didn't care. He was going to go ahead and push for the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King Jr., which I think is one of the reasons why they killed him. That's sidebar. So at that point, you know, they obviously began to send in more informants into his camp. Long story short, they could never find any proof that his lawyer was a communist in all these years. And they couldn't find proof that, you know, that Martin King was a communist. However, they still kept the wiretaps on him because they found out that he had other females on the side. He had girlfriends on the side, aside from his wife. And then they began to monitor. Now his agenda, J. Edgar Hoover's agenda became about stopping Martin Luther King Jr.'s movement by embarrassing him, by exposing his deeds to the world, and let the world see him as a hypocrite or a whatever. But when that didn't work, when they didn't play the tapes, but they told the world that he had girlfriends, and some believed it, some didn't, and his wife stayed with him. And the smear campaign didn't work. When they did not have anything to stop him, to stop his freedom movement, no crimes, they went after him socially. And it didn't work. They smeared him like a dog, and it didn't work. Not long after that, JFK died. He was assassinated. Now, mind you now, there were 97 wiretaps in all of the country, and Martin King Jr. was one of them. They monitored criminals of different levels, the mafia, the mob bosses, the communists, the traitors. They monitored these people, and this freedom fighter was one of the 97 wiretaps in America. So JFK was assassinated, and then at some point in time, J. Edgar Hoover became the president, and J. Edgar Hoover came out immediately after becoming president and said that Martin Luther King Jr. was the most dangerous black man in America. This nonviolent black preacher who had his flaws, but nonviolent black preacher who fought for freedom for black people without using violence, without preaching violence, was the most dangerous black man in America. In the world, he said. I think he said in the world. And he wanted to stop him. He had a problem with this guy's movement. We know he was a racist, but we're focusing on the movement of freedom. He did not like his movement to free, to have everyone have equal rights. And he was powerful, and he could generate crowds, large crowds, at will. At will. And they couldn't stop him. And eventually, he got assassinated, and they were monitoring him while he was assassinated. They knew it was coming. They probably said, they probably are the ones who had him killed, to be honest. When you are a patriot, when you are a freedom fighter, you would have the terrorists, the communists, the people who are running the country, who have power and influence, they will come after you. When they can't find crimes against you, they will try to smear you. And when they can't smear you, they will try to kill you. Donald John Trump is in that same vein. He fought for freedom for all of mankind in America. They tried to smear him with crimes. And when they could not smear him with crimes, they came after him on a social level, trying to destroy him, trying to embarrass him, trying to ruin his life. Because he fought for freedom. And he went as far as to create a fake pandemic so that they could start, you know, so they could cheat in an election to remove this guy from office. And Trump caught them all. And now we're in the end game where they're about to be exposed for their deeds. Not just this here, but all of the crime against humanity and everything else they've done for the last however many years it's been. They are panicking, and they should be. Follow me on Telegram. I would say Facebook, but you know, I'm not on there right now. I'm in Facebook jail again. But follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Stefan. I'll go and give it to you. /Stefan Rudd. I'm also on Telegram, t.me/Stefan Rudd. I'm also on Getter. Just put in Stefan Rudd, and you'll see me. I'm the one with the P with the wing with the orange wings in the circle. Was it flames, whatever it is. You can find me also on Rumble, rumble.com, /C/Stefan Rudd. Hit subscribe to my channel so you can get notified when I have a new video out there. My videos, if you listen to this podcast here on one of your favorite apps, then this video is also visual now. So, you know, I have videos to show you, or things to show you on the screen when I'm talking to you, so you can watch the video or you can hear it on the podcast. That's fine. I'm on all major podcasts now. Apple, Google, Stitcher. I should be on Spotify. I'm not sure. And I should be on TuneIn, and as well as a few others too. Okay, so follow me on any way you want to. I'm mostly on Telegram a lot. I'm on Telegram a lot. So if I'm not on Facebook at this time, then you can catch me on Telegram for sure. That's where I'm at the majority of my time. Okay, so you'll catch me there, and I post as much as I can there. Lately, I've been kind of busy, so I haven't posted as much. But I'll get back to posting and getting you guys keeping you guys motivated here. Okay. So anyway, we had an election get stolen. And these dummies stole this thing in broad daylight, y'all. In broad daylight. With everyone watching, everyone paying attention to them. Stop the election. And just stole it. So Trump has been on the campaign trail again. But if you notice, he's not campaigning for us. We already know what he's done and how he's done it. But he's campaigning for, so we hear him campaign right now. We're thinking that he's campaigning. We're like, well, we heard it before. Yes, of course, because we already know. We've been following this guy for the last four or five years. He's campaigning now for the people who did not have the opportunity to hear his message before because they didn't believe in him. And now that they've seen, now that he, you know, they saw the debates and Trump put all those, you know, little bugs in their ear about what was going to happen if he lost the election. And now everything he said is coming to pass just like he said it would. There's a lot of folks awake now. Trump had, you know, his riders are way bigger than before. Okay. And so he was at the Turning Point USA days ago on Saturday at, you know, in Phoenix. He dropped a lot of comps, a lot of comps. I can't do them all on one show, but there were a lot of comps that he dropped on that platform here. And his crowd was enormous, y'all. He had a crowd larger than, you know, like a football game, but he's not even like, he supposed to had lost, right? Biden had his little, what you call it, his town hall meeting, and he only had like 10 rows of people for, and everything from 10 rows back, 11 rows back was completely empty. They had to move press up to the front row, and nobody was clapping. Nobody was like, you know, looking like they were excited. It wasn't like a concert. They would sit there like it was a, you know, it was a Catholic church sermon. Are you hearing me? They're sitting there, just quiet and you know, a bump on the log. But when Trump had his little speech at Turning Point, the crowd was rabid. They were like, it was like a football game. It was like they were coming to see a show. Excited. The man who supposedly lost. So he had a lot of comps here, and we won't get to them right now. I'm not going to waste any more time here. But he had some comps here, man. And this first clip that I have here, he was talking about the mainstream media, and this is very important. It seemed like a throwaway comment that he made, but it's not. I'm going to go ahead and play it, and then we want to talk about what he said here.
Today, I want to send our profound and everlasting gratitude to every Arizona Republican who had the fortitude and the backbone to defy the lying media. Look at that. Ooh, it's a lot of media. A lot of media. See, the red lights are starting to go off now. They're going, cut. He's at it again. He's talking about the media. Now it's easy. Hey, look, some of them are down almost 80%. Can you believe that? And that's because they lose credibility, but I want...
Now, you may hear that and say, well, so what? It's another comment about the mainstream media. But you have to understand, there's a reason why he's saying this. He's letting you know, when he brings up the media now and the ratings, he's letting you know that the people are losing trust in them. Why? Because they're waking up. And this is a calm, it's a small calm. But he's saying, look, y'all, we're winning the fight because the people that were trying to wake up are waking up. How do we know? Because they're not watching the news anymore. And if they aren't watching the news anymore, then they're not getting the propaganda anymore. But human beings are weird creatures. We have to be attached to something new. So if they're not watching the news anymore, who are they watching? Uh-oh. They're not watching MSNBC anymore. CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox. Who are they watching? Probably Newsmax a little bit, which they're kind of, you know, back and forth. OANN. Or they're probably following one of the top patriots out there who's talking, like Dan Bongino, Mark Levin. They're probably following one of the, you know, X-23 Report. Who knows? They're probably following other alternative channels now. If they don't trust their media anymore, then it means that they're waking up. And we're almost to the point where we can start to move in because there'll be less fallout from what's going to happen here when Trump is reinstated in office. And he will be in office soon. And when he comes back, you know, he'll have to have the military remove certain people out of the office, although they're not even in there anyway, but they still have to remove someone optically. So they, wherever they are, if they're on a Hollywood set, they have to be moved off that set optically so that people can understand that they, you know, are not the rightful winners. Now, this next clip here, I want to show you. He was talking about the mainstream media and how they form, how they work together. And just listen to how he words this here. It's very important. I get to work here. Technology is not working today. Okay.
I'm in New York, and Rudy Giuliani was the greatest mayor in the history. I'm in New York, and Rudy Giuliani was the greatest mayor in the history of New York City, by the way.
That wasn't a throwaway comment, by the way. He's setting up the entire thing here. He says Rudy was the greatest mayor in history, right? And also he says the greatest crime fighter in history, which means that he's talking about Rudy attacking the mafia. This is all within context here. So I want you to hear that context before I play the remaining part of this clip.
And they're going after him because he understands it, and they're going after him, and he's a true patriot. What they're doing to Rudy is a disgrace. Greatest mayor and the greatest prosecutor. I mean, he was a crime fighter. He was a crime fighter, but this was the greatest mayor. And you know, if I would have said that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it wouldn't have meant as much. Now you realize what having a great mayor is all about. Because when you look at what the hell is happening to our cities run by Democrats, all run by Democrats, there's never been any, it's a crime wave, the likes of which we've never seen before. It's scary. People.
By the way, that wasn't a throwaway comment when he said all of these cities are being run by Democrats. All of them, the ones that have the highest crime, all of them run by Democrats. What is he saying, y'all? He's setting people up for the idea that they all need to be removed.
People are afraid to walk down the streets of New York, and nobody gets prosecuted, except Republicans, by the way. In every fake news story about the election, they always begin by stating that claims are unproven. This is the fake news. Those claims are unproven. You ever notice you read a story, and you're reading about massive fraud, but they don't write about that too much. You know, the biggest thing is they don't write. But they always say, while this is totally unproven, and you're saying, well, wait a minute, we caught thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. And then they go, while there is no evidence, you know, they have these little sound bites. But the craziest of them all is, and always done in unison, because, you know, they work together. This is, if this were business, they'd be put in jail because it would be called a monopoly. But the biggest and the craziest of the big lie, they call it. You know what's the big lie? The opposite is the big lie. The election was the big lie.
By the way, that was a cue sign he just made there. He does that the entire speech, by the way. He does that cue, that circle in the line, the entire speech. I mean, I've counted at least 10 times, and I lost count. So at the end, where he was clapping and pointing at people, he was saying thank you, and people say, you know, on Facebook, when they say thank you on Facebook and Twitter and Telegram, they'll say thank you, not thank you, thank letter Q. Because Trump always says thank you. He'll say thank you, and he'll point to someone in the crowd and do a Q sign symbol. So he's telling you who he is. He always does that, y'all. He just watch that next time he has a speech. He always does that. So, but that wasn't the point I was making here. He said that the media comes together like a monopoly. He threw it in there. He says, if this were a business, it would be a crime. Why did he say that? In the same context as Rudy Giuliani being the greatest mayor and the greatest crime fighter, because that's how Rudy took down the mafia, people. He was able to link up all of these different organizations and groups together by proving that there was an established committee or commission. Well, it was actually called a commission, but there was an established group of people at the top who orchestrated the entire thing. So they formed a monopoly in that area on certain, you know, in crime, basically. So this is why he made that statement. He, in the same context as Rudy Giuliani being the greatest mayor and the greatest crime fighter, because he took down the mafia, and different families, different mafia families took them all down by coming after the mob bosses. And he established that they were all a part of one commission. So therefore, you can charge them with RICO crimes as if they are one company. And so this is why he said, if the media, you know, were businesses, and they are businesses, then, you know, if they were, what he's saying is, if they were all a part of the same company, then it would be criminal. He was telling you people right there that what they're doing is committing a crime, and they're going to draw the connections that there are people at the top of this whole thing that form the entire crime syndicate that will engulf Hollywood, businesses, media, we can name it, athletes, and so on. There's this large crime syndicate that is organized from the top down that will take down the majority of big corporations out here. Take them all down. The ones who are engaged in, you know, in influence. The ones who are engaging in the same agenda in some way, shape, or form. He's telling you what's going to happen to these guys when we arrive at that part of the story. This next com that he dropped was about the laptop from hell. Hunter Biden's laptop. And this is within the same space of him talking about the monopoly and stuff. Watch this.
Newspaper reporters and reporters to stand there. They're standing with cameras. They couldn't fill the eight circles. The only thing I liked about his campaign, because he didn't really campaign, the cabal campaigned. Lots of people campaigned for him. But I did like the...
I'm sorry, this clip here, I read the wrong notes. This clip here is about the Hunter Biden painting.
The contractor, and it wasn't Hunter Biden with his artistry.
By the way, you see two Qs there? That was two Qs, right? Q, it was circle with a line, circle with a line. He does that all the time, y'all. He does that all the time. People say, well, Q doesn't exist. Trump is Q plus. Okay, he is Q plus. He does that on purpose, y'all.
But think of that. No, the contractor, those circles were so beautiful the way they were done. You know, I'm very good at building buildings and painting and all these different things. No, painting, like, I know what a good paint job is. And you're not getting it from Hunter. But it was so professionally. It was so professionally done. It was incredible. So good. In fact, I probably won't do it yet, but at some point I'm going to find out the name of the contractor that did those circles, because I want to use them for something. But what about Hunter Biden getting $500,000 per painting, and he never painted before? Could you imagine if my kids did that? Could you imagine? And now they're justifying it. Well, we want to make it non-transparent. No, actually, you should make it transparent, I guess. But actually, you shouldn't make it at all, because it's a bribe. It's a bribe, 100%.
He's telling you how they pay off people who help them with their agenda, and he's exposing, you know, he's exposing the industry of the art industry, and this is how they launder money. This is how they sell kids. They sell kids, you know, on the same way. You think a painting really costs $2 million? How do you know? How do you tell what a painting is worth? How do you tell? Is vanity? This is vanity product. Vanity. These are vanity products, y'all. It doesn't have a real value on it. It's not like, you know, something that is absolutely needed. I need it now. I have to have it. You know, if I don't have it, I'm going to die, or I can't survive, and you know, I can't live in life. No, it's a vanity. It's a vanity product. The value of that product is at the discretion of whoever is viewing it. Someone might look at it and say, oh man, this painting, I buy $4,000. Someone said, no, I buy $4 million. And then that's how that works. You can hide you can inflate those values like crazy, and no one will question you. So you can launder money, you can pay people off. And he's trying to tell us that he's going to expose one day. So he's going to one day prove how they pay off people and how they do bribes. And one of the ways they do that is through paintings and through selling artwork. So that was a part of he's letting you know that he's going to probably come after, you know, this industry as well. Remember now when we had the stimulus checks that came out, we had 3 or 4 or 5. I don't know how many we had now. I didn't get that many, but you know, I had maybe 1 or 2. But those who got 4 or 5 checks and stuff, and probably getting more coming in every month, they built out also the museums. Notice that they sent money to China. Most of the money went to China, to museums, the Smithsonian's, and I mean they were paying off, you know, their channels of money laundering. Basically, they was putting money back into the money laundering operation channels. So he's letting you know that he's going to probably expose that too in the near future. So this next clip here is talking about he was going off about he was giving us the analogy on the Tiffany robbing the diamond store, and that if you rob the diamond store, you have to return the diamonds after you lost.
Biden's getting $500,000.
That's the wrong clip. One second here.
They may have gotten away with it. We're going to find out because something's going to have to be done. But I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, if somebody robs Tiffany, a beautiful jeweler, 57th and 5th, good location, excellent location.
It really is, excellent.
And they steal the diamonds, and then they get caught, they have to turn the diamonds back. It's very simple.
Yeah, that's a great area to it's in Georgetown, the richest part of D.C. Nice area, nice stores down there, it's on the corner. But anyway, yeah, it's a great location. But he's giving that analogy because he's letting you know that if you stole diamonds, if you stole anything, and you're caught, you return what you stole. So obviously he's planning on getting back into office this year or whenever before this, you know, admin is over. He's not waiting until 2024 to get in office. He's not running, you know, to become the Speaker of the House in 22. Okay, he's getting back in before all this happens. That's his calm there.
They may have gotten away with it. We're going to find out because something.
Stop this. I'm learning this. I have this new system of doing videos. It's kind of a pain in the butt, but you know we'll get it worked out soon enough. Now this piece here is when he's discussing Mike Pence, and I want you to hear how he speaks about Mike Pence because I found it pretty peculiar.
I wish that my friend Mike Pence had that additional courage to send the results back to the legislatures because it all happened so quickly. You know, they schemed in this.
I think he says, and when he says my friend here, he's not calling him his friend, by the way. I think he's being facetious here. He's being a little bit of a sarcastic. Say, hey, this is my friend. This is my buddy. And what he's really doing here is he's gauging the crowd a response to see how they react to him. I don't think he got the response that he really wanted. I think he wanted to hear, you know, the entire crowd go boo, like they booed, you know. Then some did boo now, but it wasn't like an overwhelming boo, like when they said CNN sucks. Okay, when they chanted CNN sucks, that was when he wants to hear that same, you know, roar of a crowd. But he got a few boos here, which tells him that people, you know, don't like Pence, but they don't hate him. You know what I'm saying? So that's important there. He had to gauge to see how far he can go with that. So I believe that he pulled back on how deep he would have gone. When he, you know, later on in there, and you'll hear in a minute when he kind of gave him a pass a little bit here. But he was gauging the response of the crowd to see how they responded to Mike Pence. Because he had to see if this is a winnable issue. Still keep the votes and the people on your side if you go against Pence? That's the question here.
Planned for 4 years. This all happened so quickly. If he would have sent it back to the legislature, somebody gave him bad advice. You know, the great Thomas Jefferson. You know.
See, he said there, somebody gave him bad advice. He didn't get the reaction he wanted. If they were like, if everyone started booing at one time and it was, and then he had to stop and let them boo and chant. If he heard lock him up and stuff, if he heard that reaction, he would have went deeper. But he didn't hear that. See, he was gauging the crowd to see, you know, if they were for or against Mike Pence. And from that response, he wasn't quite sure. So he just kind of said, well, you know, he got bad advice. No. Trump knows this guy betrayed him. He can't say that right now because he didn't get the crowd, the reaction he wanted, which tells him that the vast majority of people out there don't like what he did, but they still support him in some way or give him a pass in some way.
You know what happened? Georgia, they couldn't count their votes accurately. Hear ye, the great state of Georgia cannot accurately count its votes. You know what Thomas Jefferson said? Long time ago, he said, then we will keep the votes from the great state of Georgia. He didn't say we're going to send it back. He didn't do, I'm saying, just send it back. Maybe it comes back. But when you have more votes in some places by a lot than you have voters, I think Mike would have had the right to say, excuse me, we have more votes than we have voters. If you don't mind, please take a look at it. Just a couple of the basics. Just a little basic. Now,
and right here, he's telling you what the playbook is. He said, Thomas Jefferson said, you know, take these votes back, basically. Take them back. Which means that if you recall the votes, watch this. If you recall the votes, no one gets to vote. So if enough people recall their votes, whereas nobody has 270 EC votes, then the election is invalid. And then you go to a state vote. So he said all Pence had to do, he said Pence didn't have to go out there and recall it, because then it would have been like he was trying to interfere with it to help Trump win, right? All he had to do was say, look, y'all, take these votes and look at them again. He said, he was saying we had the right to have the votes recalled and parked so that nobody is the winner, so that we have a state vote where Trump would have won. Because we have more state Senate majorities than they do. We would have won 37 to nothing, or maybe one, you know, 36 to one, whatever. I mean, nothing. 37 to 13. Okay, we would have won. You know, he would have won that at the state level, and of course, been the president. But he says, you know, that was within the right, but Pence could have just said, look, go back and look at this again, and basically cough an audit. And he didn't. But he also gave him a pass, and you know, said that, well, he understands because, you know, he said he got bad advice. That was him giving Pence a pass, so to speak, because he didn't like the crowd's reaction. You know, they should have been more like lock him up, lock him, you know, that kind of energy, but it wasn't there, so. And the next clip I have here is when he mentioned Barr. Now, mind you, there are a lot more columns here or probably key points here to talk about here. But I'm only focusing on the ones that relate to this particular podcast here. So he mentioned Barr. And he brought Barr up in a similar way of Mike Pence. As Mike Pence, where he kind of gave Barr a pass, so to speak. Because he didn't do his job properly. I want you to hear what he said first, and then I'll explain it to you.
They may have gotten away with it. We're going to find out because something.
I don't know why he keeps going back to the same doggone. What'd you call it?
I wish that my friend Mike.
Nope, that's the wrong one too.
I wish that my friend Mike Pence.
Give me a second. I get it worked out here. There we go. We're on the seventh one. Okay.
And also, one of the most corrupt places from a voter standpoint or another, along with Detroit and some others.
He's referring to Philadelphia, by the way.
One of the most corrupt places. But he found and he wanted to investigate all of this, but the Attorney General Bill Barr ordered him to stand down. And McSwain wasn't the only one. And McSwain is very angry about it. Then Bill Barr went out and said there was not fraud in the election of any consequence. Look at the numbers I'm giving you today. Look at the numbers. And, you know, we need two large ones or three small ones. We have many, many to look at. But two large ones. But in other words.
You see that? Two large ones or three small ones.
We're right there. So it is.
What he's saying is we need two large states. That they have a lot of votes, you know, a lot of EC votes to bring so you can bring Biden down to below 270 or three small ones. So everyone over there who's freaking out, oh my God, we're not going to get this done in time. We already have it. We already have Arizona, right? And Wisconsin just started auditing, and theirs be fast because they don't have that many votes to audit, right? Georgia, you know, hasn't started yet, but they are discussing it. PA is starting theirs. Theirs will be a while. So, if we're lucky, we can get Georgia to get started with this thing. Theirs will be fast too, and we'll have three states. Or if we get PA, which is a large one, if we get PA in Arizona, it's a wrap. So, this is why he said we need two large ones or three small ones.
Of consequence, it's only because sadly he just didn't look for fraud. When that letter came out from McSwain, that was a sad day for this country. Sad day. And I was wondering, because he was all excited. McSwain was all excited. He was going to go in there. Then one day it was like it's like somebody died. There was no more excitement. He was told not to do it. One day I noticed that the fake news media was calling Bill Barr a puppet of Donald Trump, and he wasn't a puppet at all. They had a picture of him with strings where I was totally controlling him. Just not true. They were saying that Bill Barr, you have to go against him, Bill Barr. Then they started saying they were going to impeach him, and they were what's called playing the ref. You know what that is? They're doing it with...
Okay, now, by the way, this is a cute... He did another cute thing here, too. Another cue sign in the air thing here. I just paused it right where he's doing it. He mentioned that Bill Barr, look how soft he is on Barr. He's like, Barr, you know, he didn't do the right thing. You know, he's not coming in as hard on Barr. And I don't know why yet. I'm thinking it may be because Barr could be cooperating. Like maybe he was under orders and is playing a role. Who knows? But Barr does play a factor in the future with this entire thing. As a witness, I believe. I know that Durham is, he's on, if he is real, I believe he is, he's going to be investigating a lot of things. He has been, and he's going to probably bring up a lot of stuff here in indictment stuff. And then we get reports that the report on Durham will be released. So this came out like the other day. That they will release a report on what Durham has found. So apparently he is out there. The deep state is panicking enough for me to believe that he's really out there. So that will come out, and he is behind the majority of the stuff here. And I believe that he will bring up about some reports and some indictments, some arrests, right? So he's kind of being soft on Barr for some reason, and we'll find out later. But we'll see why he's being soft on him. But I believe that he's a witness in this entire thing.
With the Supreme Court, too. They're nasty. You see, now again, they want to impeach Kavanaugh. Not that they want to impeach him. They want to...
Oh, he's showing you how they get people to cooperate, like Pence, like Barr. They threaten you. And now he's going to give you the reference of playing the refs. And he'll explain to you what that means in a minute.
Scare the hell out of him, so he votes along the liberal lines, because if he votes along the liberal lines, they're playing the ref better than the great Bobby Knight of Indiana ever played the ref. Remember, with the chair and this, they said, Bobby, you're not going to win that call. He said, yeah, but I'm going to win the next one. That's what they're doing. The great Bobby Knight, who was one of our great endorsements, I will tell you, when Bobby Knight endorsed Trump, Indiana was, we were doing well there before, you had to see after. Bobby Knight, that's a piece of work. But he said, it may not work this time, but it's going to work the next time. And the refs were afraid to say anything. It's true. That's what they're doing with our Supreme Court. They're trying to scare Kavanaugh.
The refs in this story would be the Supreme Court. And they're afraid to say anything. They're afraid to rule because the Democrats are playing the refs, so to speak, where they're trying to make, they're coming, they're threatening them, they're coming after them for trying to do their job right. And so now the Supreme Court is, and he's alleging, and in his analogy, he's painting it as if it's a bad thing for him, but it's really a good thing. He's making the insinuation that the Supreme Court is playing, they're not going to rule just yet. They know that the moment they rule, they're out. Okay, when they give him a positive ruling, they're out of here. So they're keeping the deep state off balance by going against Trump for a while. Let me finish first, and then I'll go ahead and explain.
They're talking about an impeachment. I just saw it again this morning in the paper. They want to impeach Kavanaugh again. It's not that they do. They want him to rule for them. And if he rules for them, they're never going to impeach him. There's not. But if he rules against them like he's supposed to because he is a conservative, then. But they also don't want to have a packed court. So they're saying, we're going to pack the courts. We're going to pack the courts. And they did the same thing to Barr. They said Trump controls him. As soon as I saw that, I said, here we go. Because how does he get out of that? Very simply, just do things like the vote wasn't rigged, and he stopped them from doing it. And I'm so saddened by it, but I also understand it because
I'm so saddened by it, but I also understand it. He's not mad, y'all. He's not upset at the Supreme Court. He's not mad at Barr. He might be mad at Pence, but he didn't get the reaction that he wanted. But he's not mad at Barr. He's not mad at the Supreme Court. Why? Because they came into the operation knowing exactly what their assignment was. And people get mad at Barr if you want to. People get mad, you know, at the Supreme Court if they want to. But I believe that the Supreme Court was where we're told to not rule in favor. Trump told them don't rule in favor of this yet. We're not ready yet. We don't have enough mass population awakeness yet. This is why he came up, you know, with the mainstream media stuff in the beginning, because he wants you to know that they're down because no one is paying attention. They're waking up. Are you hearing me? So he's letting you know from the beginning that we're almost to the point where we're getting ready to move ahead with the next phase of the plan, because people are awake now. They're not taking the vaccines. They're not, wearing masks, you know, even though, you know, they can't even get people to get the vaccine now. They got to now try to force you to get it. They're waking up. They're not watching their propaganda machines anymore. So it's they're failing. And so likewise, the Supreme Court, they were told to not rule in favor of Trump, because it could be, if they did it too early, then they would have not been around later on for when they need them for that appeal. They would have packed the courts before. So let's say that they heard the case back in February. Then what will happen then? If they heard back then and say, you know what, let's have an audit. The Biden admin, you know, they're not really there, but we're going to go ahead and they would have, Congress would have packed the, because this is really Congress's decision too, by the way, and the Senate. They would have packed the courts with other judges between, you know, after that case happened, they would have packed the courts with other judges, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, who knows? Enough to override everybody. And then the next time, you know, we have a case, they would just not hear the case. That's how that was their plan. So Trump here is letting you know the Supreme Court had to rule in favor or not rule at all and not hear the case, because if they'd done it back then, it would have ruined the chances of them later on. They wouldn't be around for the appeal. Are you hearing me? And then he would have to use military force. And that would appear to be a coup to people who were asleep. So that was why he brought that up. And he was saying, well, the Supreme Courts are playing the refs. They're not playing for this call. They're playing, or rather not playing. They're playing for something here. The Democrats are. But the courts are afraid to rule not because they're cowards, so to speak, but they're afraid to rule because they want to rule in light of the rule of law, but they have to wait until the right time to rule. If they rule early on in favor of the rule of law, then they're gone, or they're going to be outmatched when they get packed in the courts. So they play along and they don't make the calls. You know, they don't get the hearings and stuff until all the audits. Now, listen, y'all. Here's how it would have worked. Supreme Court, you know, in the first case, they would only have the right to do two things. Either decertify the election, not decertify, either hold an auction, either hold an audit tell the states to do an audit, or they could send it back to the states for a vote. Okay, they had two options there. Now, because they already voted for Trump already, you can't send it back to states without having, you know, an audit first. So the only option would have been after Biden got in was to become, you know, was to order an audit. So if after they had heard that first case and ordered an audit, they would have been packed out or impeached. And then after the audit was done, or after they got started, they would have brought in Supreme Court people to hear a case to have the audits shut down. That's how they would have done this, y'all. Even though it would have been illegal. they would have had it all shut down. So now it was all being done on their own. The states did their own audits. They didn't need the courts for that. And now we have the results of one. We'll have two or three results of three states soon. And when that comes out, then we already have that part done. We don't need an audit anymore. It's already done. So now the courts have one option. You have to send it back to the states for a vote. That's it. That's your only option now. So if the Supreme Court does their job, if I'm right in this theory, the next case will be heard. And they're gonna it'll be a 9-0 ruling, because anyone who rules against this will be impeached when Trump is back in office again. They're gone. So this is how the game is played, y'all. This is politics. Now this next one is very, very I thought it was very, very interesting how he just threw it in there. He mentioned something about the border. Okay, the context here was the border crisis. But listen to what he says here in this little soundbite.
Biden's open border policies have blown it all up in shreds so fast. And they've enriched the drug cartels, the child smugglers, the woman smugglers, and the vicious smugglers. MS-13 gang members. They are making more money with human trafficking now.
Are you
and drugs,
this?
The sale of drugs. We had fentanyl down to the lowest it's been in 15 years, because it's not just people.
Forget what he said about drugs. He just said the human traffickers, right? Now he can't say child trafficking, because for some reason that keyword, it makes people be like, I don't believe it. So he says we have the human traffickers. Some of them are children. Some of them are women. They also bring in drugs. So he's still calling it child trafficking, but he can't use the keyword child trafficking, because then the media would run that all day long and make him like a daggone fool. Like a QAnon conspiracy fool or something, you know, which they're not fools. I'm a Q nut. Okay. But he can't say child trafficking. He says human trafficking, and there's children and women involved, which means that there's child trafficking and there's sex trafficking too. And this is all coming to the border. And then after that, what he says they're making a lot of money off of that. Now, help me understand who he's referring to. What is he talking about? He says that the drug cartels are making a lot of money with child trafficking and sex trafficking. Well, who is buying them? Well, where are they coming to? The U.S., right? What's the first place they go to when they arrive in the U.S.? These kids, the women and stuff. They arrive at, you know, one of our border holding facilities, right? And what happens after that? They get placed into homes around the country. Do you really believe they're getting placed into just nice and loving families? Or are they being sold? And is Trump beginning to expose how they sell children? And the reason why they don't want to close the borders is because they're making so much money from getting the children. And the women who do not have social security cards. They don't have any ID. They're not U.S. citizens. They can come in the U.S., be sold, and they're a ghost. They are a ghost. He's telling you how they do it. They bring in these people from the border, and they sell them. They're making money. He has more to say. Watch this.
It's the drugs that come across. We had it to the lowest. This drug is a killer. A small amount can kill 1,000 people. A little amount can kill thousands of people. We had it to the lowest level it's been in 15 years, and it was going down, and now he blew the thing up. And I used to say it's incompetence, but they must really want this to happen. Why wouldn't they have finished the wall? It would have taken 2 months.
They must really want this to happen.
What are they doing?
He says that they must really want this to happen. Because, so he was exposing the human trafficking industry and how they, you know, make their money and how to, and why Biden doesn't want to have those things, the border shut down, basically. And then the very next clip I have.
Biden's open border policy.
It relates to this in some way. I want you to hear his comments about the UN. He doesn't mention anything about human trafficking, but he's getting at something here.
Growing our country. Under my administration, America was respected again and respected like never before. We withdrew from the United Nations corrupt.
Corrupt, and he paused. They called the UN corrupt. And he paused.
We withdrew from the United Nations corrupt Human Rights Council, so corrupt, which seemingly existed to criticize Israel in the United States. That's all they did is criticize us.
Human rights. He says he withdrew himself from the corrupt United Nations human rights. I want you to, those are key words there. Human rights now. They've been caught trafficking kids and sex trafficking. And they had the nerve to bring them over here to investigate us. Come on.
But not only has Joe Biden reentered the shameful and ridiculous international tribunal, but just this month, you saw this, the
international
Secretary
tribunal.
Of State, Tony Blinken.
Said, hold on here. He says they entered the international tribunal. The tribunal. It's a throwaway comment to people who don't know what a tribunal is. But basically, he's letting them know that you're going to be tried for this, as this is treason. You're going to be tried, as a enemy combatant when this is over. That's what he threw in tribunal, and people just say, "Oh, he just talking about the group." He's talking about arresting them. It's a calm. It's freaking them out because it doesn't even fit what he's saying here. I do understand that it has multiple meanings. I get that, but he used that word for a reason because he knew that the nonce would pick up on that.
Them a pandering and very, very strange letter, begging the United Nations to come and investigate
strange.
America for its alleged systematic racism. So you have. Systemic racism, he says. He wants it to be investigated. Systemic racism. I said, that's not really, that didn't happen, did it? I thought, there's nothing that's a joke about it, but I said, that's not serious, right? Systemic racism. Please come and investigate the United States.
So the UN and they were supposed to be called in here. I was told this here over a year ago that the UN will be brought in here for Trump to remove him from office when he wouldn't leave office, right? Their only purpose of them being here, coming here, was going to be from the deep state, would be to remove him from office. So I guess they're getting ready to. They know that Trump is getting ready to go back in office again because they're. The UN has now been brought here. Okay. Now everywhere the UN steps is no longer that territory anymore. So if they're in the US, they're in your living room and your house, they're not in on US soil in your house anymore. They're on UN soil. Every step they take is UN soil. Which means that they have almost immunity from being prosecuted from any crimes that happens here. Unless we declare them, a part of the same group of people, and we have to arrest them too, with the military. So the UN is here for no good reason, y'all. they're here to make sure that Trump doesn't get back in office again. And when the fraud comes out, or the proof of the fraud comes out, their plan is to make sure that Trump does not get the opportunity to get back into the White House again, which it won't work. You know, they're actually building a base now, setting up a base now in Virginia for them. It's not going to work, y'all. I mean, come on, you're on our turf with our soldiers. You're not going to win that war. So he's implying that the UN is not here for any good reasons, but also that they are definitely not the right ones to talk about human rights violations, given their long history of child trafficking and sex trafficking, and that will come out too and in the near future. And my last clip here, just, you know, I threw it in there because it has some pretty good references some things that we talked about in the past, as far as what Trump did after January 6th, where he invoked he basically declared martial law. Okay. He mentions that kind of here a little bit. Watch this here. Watch how he words this, y'all. This is pretty cool.
For all, they're going to ban it. They will get it done. In testimony before Congress, lightweight chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, actually defended the teaching of CRT, a Marxist ideology, to our men and women in uniform. Can you believe it? These soldiers, they're the greatest. They're hearing this stuff. They're saying, I can't believe what I'm hearing. The soldiers are saying it. He said he wanted to, quote, understand white rage. He wants to understand white rage. What the hell is he talking about that for? Our generals should not be focused on learning left-wing ideology. They should be focused on defeating America's enemies and winning our future wars. Hopefully we don't have them, but if we do, we have to win them. And I say it, and I'll say it, whatever. The only reason I appointed Mark Milley in the first place is because two of the world's most overrated generals, James Mattis and John Kelly, could not stand him, had no respect for him, and would not recommend him under any circumstances. They even tried to send him to Europe so he wouldn't get the job. So when they didn't like him, I said, let's give this guy a shot.
Now, I'm not sure what that is. I'm not sure if he's acting here, because I suspect that that Mattis and Kelly were acting, are acting, and Trump is as well. I can't confirm that, but Kelly did have access. He was a part of a lot of the inner workings of the cabal, not as a bad actor, but he was a part of the military, the general. So he's privy to a lot of this information. So they would trust him. This is what I was told by somebody, that they could trust him because he was basically one of the guys that they trusted, because he was military. He was an arm of the government. Okay. He wasn't involved with any crimes that I know of, but he was able to infiltrate them because he had their approval. He had their trust. So I think it's why Kelly and Mattis were brought in, even though Trump, didn't like them too much, apparently. But I think that's theater, because he's attacking those guys, and both those guys are involved with the tribunals. So you tell me who's real here. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they've turned. I don't know what's going on. I have no clue. I have no intel on this here. I don't know if they turn or if they they're all acting. But I know that Jeff Sessions, General Mattis, General Kelly, they're all involved in some way with the tribunals. All of them are. So that's why I don't pay them any mind when they take jabs at each other. Bill Barr, as well. Not he ain't part of the tribunal, but he's a witness in a lot of these crimes here. And he was actually, before Trump left office, he wrote an EO that was signed by Bill Barr, written by Bill Barr, signed by Trump, that allows for attorney generals, former and present, to use classified information in a grand jury hearing. Before you could do that, you couldn't disclose facts that were considered classified. But now, before he left office, Trump made sure that the AGs, former and present, can use classified information in a courtroom in front of a grand jury. So I'm thinking that this is all a game, and Trump and Barr played it just perfectly, as well as Kelly and Mattis and Sessions, because they're going to be used later on when everything hits the fan. My opinion. But here he's just making fun of Milley, and I'm beginning to believe that Milley might be involved with this too. I don't know, because this little comment here kind of had me confused. He said they got Milley because of this, those guys hate him. But then he said, you know, at the end, he gave him the same pass that he gave, you know, Bill Barr and Mike Pence. He said, oh, they got bad advice. Then for Barr, he said that, you know, that he understands. Watch. Just watch.
Last summer, when rioters were threatening to destroy Washington, D.C., Milley practically begged me not to send in the military to stop the destruction. I was thinking about it. It's a big step to do it. Insurrection Act. Big step to do it.
Did you catch that? Insurrection Act. He just threw it in there. Insurrection Act. He just threw it in there. Why did he say that? Because he's letting you know that he hit the button at some point in time. He didn't do it that day. But he did do it. This is the first time that he actually used that word, by the way. You know, those words. He never used that word before, you know, that I've heard of. But he's saying it now because he's letting the people know, yeah, we hit it. We didn't do it that day. but we hit it, you know, later on.
But I was getting close, but he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do that. Why would we ever want to do a thing like that?
By the way, with him saying he didn't want to do that, it's not the DOD's, the secretary of DOD's job. It's not his job. I think it was General Milley wasn't even involved anyway with that. It was the call would come from Trump, but it would require a secretary of state, a secretary of defense, Esper's to do it. And Esper's, you know, didn't want to do it then. But Trump could have removed him quickly and put someone who could, you know, who would within minutes, seconds. So that wasn't a problem. So it's the call of the POTUS to declare it. Mark Milley, that, you know, can't make that call. Esper's can't make the call. So why did Trump say this for? Because he wanted you to know that these people didn't want it to happen for a reason. Maybe it was the wrong time to use it. Maybe you wait. Maybe you wait and you play the refs. Man, they go to refs again. Maybe you playing the refs now. Maybe he was playing. Maybe Trump was playing the refs. We might hit it. We're not going to hit it. Okay, he didn't want to hit it. Okay, cool. We're not going to hit it. And then later on, you know, you hit it for real when it counts. When you have all the proof of theft. When not only do you have the people in Congress, but you now have Joe Biden, and you have a lot of people, a lot of companies involved with the same operation. Think about now all the crimes that are committed now. And now everyone that he wanted to arrest they were at one location at the same time. They went to Washington to try to get to the White House, and they did. And they were all in one spot at the same time. Isn't that easy? To make arrests or to have indictments and have closed tribunals right there. Let's go on here, because that was a key thing there. He did hit the Insurrection Act, but he did it, you know, later on. He didn't do it that day. But I guarantee you, Secretary Miller hit it. He hit that button.
After walking, and I did plenty, I signed a executive order on statues. You knock down any of our statues, you go to jail for 10 years. And it all stopped. It was a miracle. Right, Andy? It all stopped. Paul, that was great. We stopped it when they were pulling down statues. And then it got crazy. They started pulling down statues of Abraham Lincoln. You know, it would have never stopped. But I signed that.
That was not a throwaway comment. He says, they're taking down statues of Abraham Lincoln. They took down a lot of folks, George Washington, whoever. But he mentioned Lincoln. Why? Because that was the last time the U.S. was a republic under Lincoln. It was the last time. Lincoln got us out of the Federal Reserve Bank. Lincoln, you know, after that war was, you know, was won, the Civil War was won by the Republicans in the North. Lincoln got us out of the fiat debt system and went back to greenbacks. We got out of the global, the globalist, you know, the globalist system, the fiat debt note, and we went back to the dollar. And Lincoln, he was fighting insurrectionists, people who did not want him to go back to the green dollar, the dollar. People who did not want, you know, the country to be separate from the world. You know, that was what that war was about. It was about slaves. That may have been influences, whatever. But a lot of stuff there was about them not wanting to be separate from the world. Lincoln wanted us to be our own country, and they didn't want that. They wanted to still be tight. It was basically a deep state war, internal war. So Lincoln, you know, was assassinated because he won the war. He got out of the globalist system. He went back to the dollar, backed by gold and silver. It wasn't fiat anymore. And what happened? He was killed. So he says they took down Lincoln. He didn't say anything about anybody else. Just Lincoln, the last guy who declared martial law, the last guy who took down the deep state. You know, and won the war. The last guy who actually went back to the Republic. They took him down. That's why I mentioned Abe Lincoln there. Very key. And he's insinuating that he's going after the same people. Not just the ones we see here, but the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the ones who actually give us our money. He's going after all these guys.
That order, and as soon as I signed that order, not one event took place. You get 10 years for even attempting to take it down. It all stopped. Amazing. It's amazing. After walking with me to the smoldering church, they tried to burn the church down the day before. The smoke was still coming out of it. Milley issued a groveling apology because he caved to the press. He was afraid of the press. And it was really in order to take off the pressure. Again, is what they do to these people is they come after them through the media, through every way they can, and they end up being weak people. All he had to do was say that I'm proud to walk with anyone representing the President of the United States, and people would have understood that. He apologized. And that was the end of him. When he did that apology, that was the end of him. Nothing.
Now, that last part there kind of gives us a little bit more context. Now, that part I didn't even catch the first few times I saw that. When he says, you know, that was the end of him. So here he's implying that Milley is done. Meaning that when this is over, if he's not already taken, there's rumor out there. I haven't heard from any intel sources. There's rumor out there that Mark Milley is already, arrested, tribunal, and executed. There is rumor out there stating that. I don't know if it's true or not. And that when we see what we see now could be a double, or it could be, you know, old footage, or could be a CGI event, or someone that's wearing a Hollywood level mask, makeup and stuff. So right here, Trump says that was the end of him, and he said it with a laugh, like like he's not here anymore, and that kind of makes me believe that maybe he is talking about Mark Milley being taken care of for his crimes. So I tell you, the stuff that Trump does, you know, in his speeches and stuff, it's like you won't catch them all, even if you watch it 4 or 5 times, because he drops a lot of comps. And he wants people to pick up on what he's saying here. He understands what the people are believing or understanding. He understands what we are talking about. So he puts those things in his speech. By the way, he did mention something about the vaccines. But if you notice what if you notice what he said that yes, we had the vaccines and you know, you should get it, but you know, you have your rights. And people get mad at, you know, the people who like DeSantis and stuff, you know, who tell you get the vaccine, da da da. And why do you get mad at them for? That's his opinion. It's not a crime for, you know, it's not a crime or is it tyranny to sit up here and say, you get the vaccine, I got mine. I mean, I can name all the radio hosts who have vaccines. I can name all the people who came out, you know, said, you know, they got it. They're all patriots. No, they're not traitors. There are a large number of people who will believe in vaccines regardless. And just because you're awake to it and you know what it is, doesn't mean that they, you know, the world does. So anyway, the part that's tyrannical is when you make people get it, but saying get it, it's okay. That shouldn't, you know, make you upset, you know, at somebody. That's their opinion. Well, he's the president of the United States. That's fine. I don't care. He's a U.S. citizen. He has his opinion, and you have yours. And I have mine. Ron has his. And you have yours and I have mine. But they're patriots. They're not making it mandatory. They're not saying go out and get it. You know what? We'll come to your door. They're saying those who want it, it's there for you. Go get it. But those who don't want it, don't get it. And it'd be a terrible thing for people to make it so political. Because I think people are making it political now, even though it is dangerous. I get all that stuff there, but we're making it political now. We're making it seem we're turning into liberals. Well, we turn on people who support it as if they're, you know, criminals. Like they have their opinion. I know a lot of Republican patriots who will not go out in the world without a vaccine, and the COVID shot. They got both COVID shots. And they're like, you know, you're getting yours? I'm like, no. Why not? Because it's dangerous. And, you know, they just, okay, whatever. Let it go. No big deal to them. They don't care. I don't care. And that's it. That's fine. They can have their opinion. I can have mine. But I'm not going to disown that person because that person has an opinion that's different than mine. That'll make me a tyrant. But anyway, that's this sidebar here. So anyway, those are the comms. I got a lot more comms, but I'm not going to get into that stuff today. He had a lot of stuff that he said in here that lets us know that we're on the verge of some serious changes here in the next few months, the next few weeks. So I believe that we're going to see things happen a lot faster, move a lot faster. He's letting us know that the time is now. He's hitting people hard. He came at them real hard at this thing. He attacked Doug Ducey like Doug Ducey was getting killed in his speech. So he's trying to primary the rhinos out of office, because when he gets back in the office, you know, he has to be able to establish himself as the, well, let me say, he has to eradicate, you know, the enemy party, Democrats, right? They'll be removed by force, arrest, whatever. Okay. But you can't arrest, you know, the GOP. You'll lose the people. You have to primary them out of there. It's bad optics to have them all arrested at one time. You have to primary them out of there first, as many as you can. And then, of course, you know, that way you only have to arrest a few of them. Then you can arrest them later on privately. But to remove sitting people, it's a shock. So I believe that the Democrats will be arrested, you know, just like it was in Myanmar, where they, you know, had the entire party shut down. I believe that would happen over here. But you can't do that to the GOP because the shock value would be too much. You have to primary these people out of office and get them out of here. This is why he's campaigning for the midterms for people to remove these GOP safely so that we don't damage the voting class and make them not trust, you know, these, you know, the entire party as a whole over the actions of a few people. So when they get, you know, this is why, you know, they had this one governor, this one was a Senate, a congresswoman, I think it was, or whoever she was, I can't remember her name now. She came on, you know, on the stage and had a speech. I forget her name. And she got like three citizens in and they booed her off the stage. It was to the point where she was like, can you let me finish my point? You know, and they got loud to boo because she voted against, election integrity. She voted against it. And the people didn't forget that. And Trump never let the people forget that she voted against it before, like weeks leading up to this talk. So when she appeared on stage, they booed her when she started walking off the stage. They booed her louder when she spoke. And when she said, you know, said, listen to what I got to say, they got louder. And it was to the point where she actually had to walk off the stage. She got maybe 30 seconds into her speech and had to walk off the stage. And as she walked off the stage, she said, I'm running for Secretary of State for Arizona, and I'm going to win. And she walked off the stage arrogantly. That's all she had. That's all she had. Because she thinks that they're going to be able to cheat next year. But she doesn't realize that this is all coming to a head really fast. And when this is over, not only will she not be able to run, she might even be in jail. I'll see you tomorrow.